So welcome to Talk On To Walk On, our first episode of 2024. Patrick and I decided that we wanted to talk about big decisions. And the reason why we chose this topic is because we were sitting having a conversation and we were reflecting on when in January we've made big decisions in our lives. Mine was to decide to, well, that my marriage was probably over back in 2010. And I don't know what year Patrick's was, but he's chosen a moment when he decided to make a big career change. So we will be talking about that. But we also want to talk about the fact that making big decisions has the biggest influence on our lives. Yet for some reason, we really struggle to do it. And we want to sort of explore why we find it so difficult and why we fall into these what's known as decision traps created by having probably too many choices, the need for perfection and society's expectations of us. So with all that in mind, let's talk on to walk on and let's talk about big decisions and let's see where it leads.
Now that's great, and this is going to be a massive topic, isn't it? We got so much to say, and I guess we're at a stage of our lives where we can look back at lots and lots of big decisions we've had to make. Some will have been great decisions. Some we might look back and think, well, what would have happened if I had taken this alternative route, and so on. It's something we want to talk about because there are sort of tips and techniques and things that you can use to try to guide you to what will hopefully be the right decision. And we're not talking about any old decision, are we? We're talking about big decisions. So, yeah. So in our lives, I think big decisions usually revolve around relationships. They revolve around career. They revolve around money. It's those kinds of topics where it's potentially, that decision is potentially taking you down a path in your life. It could be, you can say it's life-changing, but it's certainly a fork in the road where you say, well, should I just carry on doing what I'm doing and not make a decision at all? Or should I actually make the decision and embark on a different way forward?
Yeah. Apparently, we make about 20,000 unconscious decisions every day. So like at lightning speed, you know, getting up, getting dressed, all those instinctive things that we do all day, every day. So you would think it would be quite easy to make a big decision because we're constantly making decisions in our lives, but there's a definite difference. And for some reason, when it comes to that big decision where we think it's going to actually impact on our future and the future of the lives around us, we instinctively hesitate because, as I've said before in previous podcasts, particularly the one on self-talk, our brain is there to protect us. And as soon as it feels that hesitation, it wants to just make us stop and just go, whoa, where are you going with this? No, 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 no. Just stay in your comfort zone. Stay very firmly where you are.
Yeah. And you know, we all know people, don't we, in our lives who seem to live their lives, let's say, moaning or complaining about things. It might be their job. It might be a situation they're in. And you get frustrated with it, those kind of, because you feel like grabbing them by the shoulders and saying, just make a decision, you know, stop complaining. What is a put up or shut up sort of thing? Because people do struggle to make big decisions, inevitably. The alternative is we admire, don't we? We seem to admire people we come across who seem to be able to make decisions very, very quickly, without hesitation, very self-confident. And, you know, you have a certain admiration for those. But I think the majority of us struggle with big decisions because we don't like the uncertainty. We don't like the risk. We don't we fear failure. We fear that the impact it might have on other people and so on. So I think that's the default. The default for the majority of us is that we find making big decisions very difficult. And we, quite honestly, we'd probably rather put them off.
Yeah. And I think what we want to talk about today is when we've made some difficult decisions. And you mentioned there about put up or shut up. And that's definitely one of my things that I do to interrupt my brain when I'm doing my own heading, trying to work out whether I'm going to make a decision. And the one thing, the one place I tend to get to right before I make the big decision is when I say to myself, Michelle, you either shut up about it or you do something about it, because you are doing my head in by weighing up this analysis paralysis, weighing up all the pros and cons. But actually, I think I'm a pretty good decision maker. I don't know, only because I quite like risk. I've made numerous decisions in my career. I made the biggest decision ever to leave the legal career. So I think when you've made big decisions and then the smaller ones, I think actually become a bit easier. I don't know. I actually think I'm pretty good. And I know you talk about the 80-20 rule, and I know a lot of leaders in particular use the 80-20 rule, don't they? Without waiting around for their extra 20% of information, make the decision on the 80% right. That you know.
But I think that's great. That's a great sort of rule of thumb, because if you didn't have that, if you strived for perfection all the time, you probably would end up not making a decision at all, because you would never get there, would you?
Well, there's no such thing as perfection. Let's just put that one out there. Whenever you make a decision, it is not going to be, it might ultimately down the line, and you can look back and join the dots and go, this happened, that happened, but you can't do that looking forward. So you can't predict what the future is actually going to hold. But what you can do is make some calculated decisions, sort of small calculated decisions that ends up helping you make that big decision. And it is, again, something we've talked about before, is taking that time out. Or what we tend to do is we become really overwhelmed and we let life carry on. We let the overwhelm of normal life, of going to work, getting up every day, you know, paying the mortgage, paying the bills, getting the kids to school, dealing with parents, all these things, particularly in midlife, life can become quite overwhelming. It can slow down, but it can also become, your responsibilities can become more and more and more. And what we tend to fall into the trap of instead of thinking, you know what, I'd love to change my job. Oh, do you know what? I haven't got time to think about it. I just don't have the headspace. And another key thing for me has been to take time out and just have a minute to think about what I really want in life. And that's something I definitely did when, for example, I've changed career, or, and you know, decided that, you know, the marriage I was in was no longer serving me and the life that I wanted. You know, sounds quite selfish, but you do have to, really do have to take that time out for you.
No, that's right. And I think it is, we talked about a sort of default position. I think that this is a topic which people are interested in, because so many of us have our busy lives. And as you say, we say, well, there's no time to think about this. I've just got to carry on with it. And that isn't, as we know, that isn't great for you. It's not great for your mental health. It's not great for your relationships. There are a whole lot of things that it's not great for. You mentioned earlier the example that you're going to give. You're going to talk about your 2010 relationship breakdown. Mine is a couple of years earlier, actually. Mine was 2008, and you wanted me to talk about my example, which was when I decided to resign from a particular job I had at the time. And it was a difficult decision for quite a few different reasons. I had a good job. I enjoyed the job in terms of the people I worked with. The pay was reasonable, but I didn't find it fulfilling. And the thing that really got me was that I had quite a lot of responsibility in this job, and the big, big decisions that I had to make, I got very little support for. So when I wanted to talk to my seniors and particularly the people I reported about the big decisions that had to be made, they didn't really want to engage, but they were very happy to engage on all the little decisions. And that just made the job unfulfilling. There was then the added point that there was some like slightly dodgy ethical standards in that business that made me feel very, very uncomfortable. And it all came to a head on a New Year's Eve when I was working on a deal, and I decided enough was enough. And obviously I'd been thinking about this decision for quite a long time, but when the time came to actually make the decision, it's almost a split second, isn't it? You make the decision, you hand in your notice, you press send on the email or pick up the phone. I'd obviously been toying it for quite a while. And it involved me handing in my notice, giving up a job with uncertainty and not knowing where that would lead. With hindsight, again, in terms of my career path, definitely the right thing to have done. Of course, there are things I loved about the job that I miss. But it was a difficult decision. It turned out to be the right decision for me to make. But there were definitely parts of me that thought, am I being really irresponsible? I had my two kids were very young at that stage. I didn't have another job immediately to go into, so I knew I'd have to start looking for another job. But you know, I had to make that. I'd like to say courageous step. Other people say, "Oh well, you're foolhardy. Are you sure you want to be doing this?" But I'd mulled it over and got it right in my mind for quite some time. It didn't make it an easy decision to do, but in the end, it was definitely the right decision.
And what I love about that story, Patrick, is particularly there's always, they call them, is it the couch critics or something? The people who sit on their sofa, don't do very much with their lives, yet they're the first to jump up and go, what the hell are you doing? What, you must be mad. What are you doing that for? And I think that's another key takeaway, isn't it? That we have to choose very carefully who we take advice from or who we open up to. I'd certainly, as we do, advocate opening up to somebody about how you're feeling. But sometimes, actually, it's not the right thing to do, unless it's the right person. Because people come to you with all kinds of observations and advice when they're not living how your everyday life. They're not living in your head. They're not living with those moments where you're not being supported. They don't know exactly how you're feeling, unless somebody's been in that exact position, maybe. So we have to be very, very careful, A, about opening up, but B, also, if we do open up, who we open up to, and C, how much we take in of that advice. But we have to remember that it's our decision. We have to take accountability. We can't get somebody else to do it for us, because inevitably, if somebody tells you what to do, and then that decision ends up being the wrong one, it's just going to end up a complete... you go from one nightmare into another one. And I definitely think it's the right thing to do, to find the right person. But I think when it comes to making big decisions, there's no better person to make it other than you yourself, and for you to be accountable. But again, at some point, you have to draw the line and make that decision and give yourself a deadline, maybe. And that's why we sort of chose this topic for January, because we felt that it is a time. Okay, we all make, or we don't all, I think it's less so these days, resolutions that tend to fall off. You know, we fall off the wagon with them by sort of the end of January, early February at the latest. But what I do think it is a good time for is to actually think, right, what's this year going to look like for me? What's this year and beyond going to look like for me? You know? So, yeah, I think it's definitely a moment where, yes, we advocate talking and opening up, but the biggest thing that I would say is you have to find the answers within yourself, and you have to make the space to do that. And give yourself a deadline by which you're going to make this decision, because otherwise you will just end up cracking up.
And the other thing is, of course, that the decision you make, you're going to live with. So some decisions, you know, changing your job, handing in your notice, moving on are sort of slightly irreversible. But you know, when we talk about, you know, what we're talking about here on this episode, decisions such as, it could be, I've got to get a grip on my life and eat more healthily, or I've got to get a grip of my life and start doing some exercise and get in shape. And those are, in a way, decisions that some people flip-flop, don't they? Our conversation about this episode and January and was in the context of New Year's resolutions, where we said we don't want to get into New Year's resolutions. But it is around this time of year that people make decisions such as trying to change their lifestyle, let's say, for the better in a particular way. And that's when you do need your friends and your colleagues around you encouraging you, because nobody's going to say to you, no, I think that's a bad idea. I don't think you should start eating healthily, or I don't think you should start exercising. So those are big decisions, which, to pick up what you were just saying, are down to you. They've got to be driven by your own your own motivations as to why you're doing it.
Yeah, and you have to learn to just start putting yourself at the heart of your own life. And it's something that we're instinctively not able to do. It feels selfish. It really does. If you're thinking in particular, you know, the end of a marriage, or and if there's children involved, it's definitely up there with one of the biggest decisions that you will ever, ever make. Nobody gets married to end a marriage. You know, nobody gets married. Everybody gets married with the hopes and dreams that you will grow old, happy and healthy together and grow a family or share many, many years of happiness and life experiences together. In terms of what happened with me, without going into lots of detail, mine was wasn't just the turn of a year, it was the turn of a decade, 2010. I actually ultimately didn't get divorced till 2014 in terms of the documentation. But I think what happened with me, and it's perhaps a little bit like the health one that you've talked about, things happen in your life that lead you to make that decision. You've got to keep looking at what's going on and how you're feeling. I was in business with my ex-husband. We'd been through an awful lot together. You know, we had our beautiful daughter, Hannah, but, you know, we'd also tried for many, many years for more children, which didn't happen. Let's say we were in business together. We'd really invested truly in each other. But along the way, our ways were lost, and some trust went out the window as well. Finances were very difficult, really challenging. And the thing for me was, it wasn't about money. It wasn't about the children thing. It was more about we'd lost each other along the way, I think. I definitely lost myself. I definitely felt like I stopped seeing our future aligned. We just become very different people. And I actually got up one New Year's Day. We were all on a family trip with friends, actually. You know, it'd be something that'd be Instagrammable today. You know, waking up in a cottage in Wales, you'd had New Year's Eve together with your friends, all lang syne and all that. And everyone, it was really early in the morning. And I just went for a really long walk by myself. And yeah, it was. So Anglesey means a lot to me, because I just remember walking and just feeling just so incredibly sad, incredibly empty. I couldn't see a future for us as a family anymore. I couldn't see a future, the future that I wanted, that I'd hoped and dreamed of when we got married. And it did ultimately end in the marriage, but it didn't happen straight away. But it was almost the start of the spiral towards the end. So I think sometimes what happens is I definitely made my mind up that this wasn't how I wanted to live my life anymore. But obviously it had been building and building and building and building. And I think new year, new start, you know, all that new year, new me narrative definitely gets into your head. And I think it gets into your head potentially in a good and a bad way, but in a good way, it actually does make you think, well, what do I want? What do I want? And certainly in midlife, you know, we know a lot of our listeners are in midlife. It's easier to just say, I'm just going to stick with it. I've got my daughter, we've got our kids, I'll just stay where I am. I'll just put up and shut up, Michelle, and put up with it. But to be honest, that's just not who I am. I am very much somebody who loves life, who knows that she now knows after lots of counseling that she deserves the best in life, that life has to offer. But I also know that I have to make those decisions to make sure that that happens to me. So yeah, that long walk did result in me making a decision that I could no longer carry on this way. I then gave it another year or so, but just really in tune to, can things change? No, they didn't. In fact, they just got worse. And 18 months later, you know, our marriage was over. So yeah, I don't really know what in terms of adding value to the listeners. I just really wanted to give you the story of how it was just one of the most difficult decisions of my life. And it didn't end up in, you know, Patrick running in and in my knight in shining armor to the rescue and giving me the life that I want. There's so much more that happens in between that, isn't there, Patrick? Yeah, we both know that.
And I think that years.
Yeah, but I know there's a lot of people that just think, oh, look at you now. And yeah, yes, look at us now. But there's no way I could have predicted. But I knew what I wanted. And I also, which is an important point, knew what I didn't want. And I think that's Steve Jobs actually, is there's a quote from Steve Jobs, and he says it's equally important to know what you don't want to help you work out what you do want.
And your point,
that's a great place to start.
Your point that you said that back in that New Year's Day on 2010, you said that you couldn't see a future the same way. Okay.
Yes.
So you knew what you didn't want. You saw that this couldn't continue the way it was going. But could you also visualize what you did want?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Because I think that's what puts, again, going back to why people don't make decisions, is that they can't visualize the outcome that they're wanting for themselves. So they'll get stuck in a position where they can't make the decision because they can't see what the future looks like. And obviously they need to see a positive future. They need to see those things that they're trying to achieve in life,
yeah.
Give them a fulfilling life.
Yeah, you definitely need to have vision and think about what it is that you what you don't want, but B, then that leads on to what you do want. I think when it comes to divorce and relationships, it doesn't necessarily mean, oh, I want to meet my knight in shining armor and run off into the sunset. Actually, the reality of it is you have to be courageous to know that there will be, it could be a long time, it could be a short time, a significant period of time where you are on your own. You are not supported anymore. You are not in a unit of two. And again, I think when people realize that actually, I think I can do this by myself. I know that it's scary, but actually what's scarier to me is staying stuck with this. You know, I would much rather be accountable to myself. I would much rather be on my own with control of my life and my daughter's life, you know, with the complication of, you know, shared parenting, which didn't happen. But anyway, that's another story. But I think for me, I just knew that I would be happier on my own with whatever that looked like. I just knew that I couldn't stay in this unit anymore with the way that we were without massive changes. And you know, my ex wasn't willing to make those changes. You know, he would say that he would, but nothing would change. And that ultimately led to the final breakdown of the marriage. But the key for me was knowing that I could do this by myself. And that's scary. That is a scary decision. And actually, looking back, again, it's getting that balance, isn't it? I didn't really open up to anyone. Everyone was really shocked. I think people had hints of it, but I'm very much, and well, the old me was very much someone who felt that she had to make all these decisions by herself. I didn't want to include people. I didn't want to drag people into it. I didn't want people because I just knew that no one would fully understand, because it's you that's in the marriage, not other people. Now, if I had my time again, I'd probably get some counselling, or, you know, maybe a joint counsellor would work. I'm not so sure, because there were just the differences were just too fundamental in terms of what each of us wanted out of our lives, and our values had changed as well. But I think for me, it is that balance again of you have to make the decision ultimately yourself. But on reflection now, I probably should have opened up more, not necessarily to those closest to me. Maybe, again, I'm a big counsellor advocate, but just somebody independent, or a life coach, or, you know, somebody who can really ask you those challenging questions to make sure that you're on the right path for what you want for the life you want to create.
I don't know what the stats are, but I'm going to guess that not many people, when their relationships or marriages are breaking down, share a lot of the detail and the pain and the suffering that you're going through with a friend or lots of friends. I think I could guess that when that does happen, then the relationship is pretty much over, because whilst you're still in the relationship, you've got a certain amount of loyalty to your spouse or your partner.
Yeah.
And you don't really want to go, unless it's a counsellor and that's a different type of relationship. You do internalise. You said that you talked about what happened in 2010, and then eventually you were divorced in 2014. You had to carry that. You had to carry that for a long, long time.
It left in 2012. It ended in 2012.
Yes.
But the, you know, and we could do a whole podcast on what came after that. But I do remember somebody just, when I did open up, it was somebody I didn't really know. Well, he was a friend, but he wasn't, you know, it was somebody who just happened to come to the house and I need something done. And he was saying about he'd been divorced. And I mean, I can laugh about it now. And I just remember him turning around to me and saying, "Do not get divorced, love. Don't get divorced. It's a nightmare. You know, financially, it's a nightmare. With the kids, it's hard. The emotional roller coaster you're going to go through. Just stick with it. Just stick with it if you can." And I just remember going, actually, I needed him to say that, because I just knew more than ever that, no, I've made my mind up. So that was quite good that he said that to me. But what's interesting was I'd already made my mind up, whereas if he'd have said that to me a year before, I'd have had a massive wobble about it. But they are all the things you think of anyway when you make these decisions. I know you've been through it, Patrick. Our experiences were obviously quite different. But I know that for you, it was about the life that you wanted to live, that you were, you know, it was just all, you just knew that you wanted something else, you know. It's hard, isn't it?
I wanted something different and I wanted something more.
Yes.
And I was, I just turned 50 and I was conscious of my own mortality and the years that I had left in my life. Hopefully I've got midlife to 100. I was conscious of that and what life should be offering me and what I was getting for it. Just going back to that story you just gave of somebody saying, don't get divorced, whatever you do, don't get your divorce. You were clearly unhappy. So to paraphrase or to summarize what that individual was saying, he was basically saying, look, it's better just to remain unhappy for the rest of your life. Which is an awful thing, a bit of advice to give, actually, for somebody who was unhappy in their life. And just to change the narrative or change the subject a little bit into something which is I find quite amusing is, and we've talked about this before, is this concept of Sunday Island.
Yeah.
And I think some of our listeners might have heard about this Sunday Island idea before, but it's this you've got to visualize it, that there's this island where apparently 95% of us live. And the great thing about this island is that you don't have to do anything. So you don't have to take action. You don't have to make decisions. You don't have anybody hassling you. And all you need to do on Sunday Island is think about all the things that you're going to do someday. And, you know, someday I'm going to be my own boss. Someday I'm going to get a job that I really, really love. Someday I'm going to be in a relationship which is fulfilling and loving. Someday this, someday that. And of course, the point is that people don't actually take action. So what you were just saying about that individual who came around and told you not to get divorced, he was clearly living on Someday Island, and he wanted you to stay on Someday Island as well, and just have that as a dream. And I love the story of Someday Island, because I think it's one of those images where you think, well, I don't want to stay on this island. I don't want to be characterized by somebody who's living on Someday Island, because all these things that I need to be doing in my life, I've actually got to get on with it and do them. I need to sort my finances out. I need to sort my relationships out. I need to get the job that I want. And that requires courage. It requires a certain attitude to risk taking. It needs confidence. It needs all the things that sort of we've talked about so far in terms of making those big decisions.
Yeah, and the thing is, society again, we've talked about in the past, is how they like to keep us in boxes, because all hell breaks loose when you break the norm or you do things that people don't expect you to do. You know, I've done a lot of that in my previous life. Not only divorce, I left my legal career behind. I, you know, go to university, so that was in the family. So that was, again, from a very early age, I made a big decision there. You know, and then 10 years in the law, and then circumstances come again where I'm just really unhappy and I'm like, I need to do something about this. And then that led into a career of, in business, a business world. And I think when you're in the business world, you have to get used to making big decisions, and you can't have all the information to you. Yet you can make some calculated risks, and you can, you know, do like I like to do is the fours and against, very simple exercise. Why should we do it? Why should we not? Right, okay, that's enough for me. Let's make that decision. And I think certainly people in business are far more used to making big decisions than if you're, don't get me wrong, in a steady career, for want of a better phrase. So I certainly think if your brain is used to making quite courageous decisions, then when it comes to the big decisions, I think it is easier, because you go, well, I've done this before. Not that I'm going to get divorced again, promise you that. But you do go, well, I've done it before. What's the worst that can happen? Because I've made these decisions in the past and I've been absolutely shitting myself, petrified of what the hell's going to happen. And actually, it was hard at times. But actually, when I really look back, it was the right decision and it's led me to where I am today. And I think it does make you, and I think it's made me in particular, a little bit fearless, because I went from leaving the law to running my own business to then with my ex and employing people, to then working for myself and working for companies, and that as a consultant. So as a consultant, contracts end, and then, you know, everyone's like, oh, what are you going to do next? Well, I'll just get another job. I will work for someone else, doing consultancy for somebody else. I'm a little bit fearless in that way. I know that there's nothing that any of us can't learn if we really put our minds to it. And there's nothing we can't achieve if we really put our minds to it. And I think it's because I've had lots of change in my life, that actually when it comes to making big decisions and taking risks, I'm much more able to do it and much more for it. But saying that, you know, it is nice to have some stability as well. It is about balance. But we're in the middle of something now, aren't we? We're going, I know that friends of ours are going, what are they doing now? What are you doing now? Because it's a little bit addictive.
It is. And, you know, the you talk about stability, and I'll contrast that with choices as well. There are some people who don't want their life to be tipped upside down every 12 months. They want to have stability. They want to have the same job. They want to live in the same house. They want to go to the same place each year on holiday. And that stability is a source of comfort for them. And I don't know, because I'm not one of those people. So, but I don't know whether those types of individuals who want stability, whether they get presented with the same choices in life. Because I come back to this thing about big decisions in our lives are all about what life is thrown at you in terms of choices. Do I go down this road or do I go down that road? You know, it's the sliding doors, sort of the sliding doors moment as well. And my question is, individuals who have a very stable life where nothing has changed, is that because that the choices aren't being presented to them in life? They've never been given the opportunity to think about getting another job, or they've never been given the opportunity to say, well, why don't I go on holiday here as opposed to there, or and so on. Mm-hmm. Or is that a state of mind that they have? It's quite a difficult one to throw up when we're talking about maybe some little tips and hints as to how to make big decisions. If you're never faced with big decisions in your life, then it doesn't really matter, does it?
I actually envy those people a little bit. I always remember saying, oh God, why can't I remember somebody saying to me, there was a friend of mine who used to have pizza every Friday night, and they made pizza with the kids, and it was like religion. And I remember somebody him saying to me, you could do with having pizzas on Friday nights. And it was more, he didn't literally mean pizza, he just meant, you just need some certainty, Michelle. Calm the hell down. You know, I almost became addicted to change, to risk, to excitement, to challenges, to drama, maybe a little bit. And to be honest, I think a lot of that was distraction. A lot of it was distraction from my reality of instability. Of, you know, the fact that my marriage had broken down, the fact that perhaps my career was a little bit disjointed in terms of who am I working for now, who am I not. And like I said before, that can become a little bit addictive, and you can use it as distraction from actually pausing and stopping and seeing what it is you really want. But at the same time, there are the people who don't take any risks at all and are just happy with their lot. And if they're genuinely happy with their lot, then fair play to them, you know, fair play. I know that that's not for me, though. I know that that's not for me.
And as you know, because you know me, my view on that is that those individuals aren't necessarily the best candidates for living a healthy and long life. I think you need that low level of churn and stress and anxiety and things to keep you on your toes physically and mentally to live a long and healthy life. I remember you once, and again, not mentioning names, but talking about somebody who was older than us. I think they were in their 70s or 80s, and you were saying, well, they lived so long because they didn't have a care in the world. They had a stress-free life. And in fact, sometimes we talk about the royal family.
Yeah.
Members of the royal family live into their 80s or 90s because they have everybody doing everything for them. I'm not sure whether that's exactly true. I'm sure it's more to do with their genes, and they probably have more stress triggers than we probably think. But going back to what you're saying, having change in your life, seeing what choices life is throwing at you and what alternative paths you can take to stay fulfilled, to stay purposeful, I think, being very simplistic, is a good thing. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And I think just letting the world go idly by, a state black and white, is a bad thing.
But isn't there a line they say, the place where you'll find the most wasted potential is in the cemetery? I was listening to something on a podcast, and I remember somebody talking about when you go in, you don't want to be that person when, if you've passed away, everybody rocks in 6 weeks later goes, where's John? Where's John? Oh, John died. Did John die? God, oh, that's sad. Didn't know John had died 6 weeks. You don't want to be John, do you? You know, and nobody actually notices you're not there anymore.
Yeah.
Because you make such little impact on other people's lives. But maybe John was happy with that. But we do also want to make leave a legacy, don't we, and leave an impact, even if it's just for, say, 5 years, 10 years, ideally longer would be nice. Yeah. But it all comes back to those making choices and making those decisions and how you want to live your life. You know, as I say, we all want to leave a bit of a legacy. We all want to be remembered. And you want, I just love the idea of having a good story to tell, you know, write your own script. Obviously, you know, don't be completely reckless and ruin other people's lives along the way. But there will be some damage that needs to happen. There will be some pain. But know that it's not forever. You know that time passes and things, life does improve based on the decisions that you're willing to make. I think we want to get into some takeaways now, Patrick, in terms of, you know, I think we've given some great tips, but I think for me, my very first one, and I think I have already said it, is, you know, in making those decisions, take some time for you, you know, really tune into your gut and think about what it is that you actually want to do. Do you want that career change? Is this relationship no longer for you? Is this relationship still serving you or not? Is there that business idea that's been eating away at your belly and your heart? It's something that's never going to go from your brain. It's always going to come up. It's a bit like me with the podcast. Why the hell am I doing it? Because it doesn't go away. And I think while it's still nagging at me, I'm going to do it. I have to do it. It's something in my heart and belly that's telling me to do it. And that's why we continue to do what we do, because we think we found a bit of a purpose with the Talk On To Walk On podcast, not only for our self-growth, but for the growth of others who happen to be listening to us. So that comes back to your point about, you know, making big decisions, and decisions that make change gives us a sense of purpose and a sense of feeling that we're alive.
That's my takeaways, or little summary at the end, I guess. The first one is it's never the wrong time of your life to make big decisions. You know, we previously talked about how we will tend to become a little bit more cautious as we get older, but that isn't an excuse not to make big decisions. You can continue making those decisions through your life. So I'd say sort of be bold and courageous. And then the other one is when you're making those decisions, just think about what the alternatives are for not making the decision. We've talked about Sunday Island. And try, if you can try to visualize the outcome that you're trying to achieve by making that decision, I think that's helpful along the way. And then thirdly, I love deadlines and accountability and so on. So if you've got a decision, don't let it drag on. Set yourself a realistic deadline in terms of when you want to make that decision by. And talk to somebody about it, depending what that decision is, and to the extent that you can talk to somebody, about it and help them, they can help you stay accountable to making that decision by that deadline. So share when you can, a burden shared is a burden halved, as they say. So that, okay. Those are my three little final tips before we close. Yeah.
And I think one thing that there's a few things I wanted to pick up on there is also taking time to write things down, because things do, they say they don't know what you think until you write it down. If it's as simple as fors and against, or just write at the top of a one page, though, not much more than that. What do I want? You know, what do I want? And it could be lots of things. It could be lots of things. And sometimes lots of things, though, end up in that paralysis situation where there's too many choices. But then, you know, drill down, just keep drilling down. Take that time to drill down and just keep, you know, highlight a pen, post-it notes, whatever it takes. But just try and choose one thing. And train that brain to keep making decisions and being courageous, because the more your brain gets used to you doing it, the more you'll do it again and the more you'll do it again. Just don't get too addicted, because it can become addictive, but it can. So it does make life a little bit more exciting. Just watch how it impacts those around you as well. And just to end on, there are these decision traps, analysis paralysis, don't have too many, which I've just said. be careful who you talk to. Yes, open up, but ignore those pressures from society and what society expects of you. This is your life. You've only got one. Go for it and look at, you know, put you at the center of things, even though it feels selfish to do it. You have to start putting yourself at the center of your own life. As my counselor once said to me, Patrick isn't your world. Hannah isn't your world. You are your world. They are your Asia. They are your America. They are your Europe. But you are your world. So it is up to you to make those decisions and take your life into the direction you want to. So take time out, put yourself first, lose the perfection because it prevents action, and see where it leads, literally.
That's a great way to end. Positive. Take those decisions and see where it leads.
If you've enjoyed listening to our Talk On To Walk On podcast and you want to know more about our coaching, mentoring and talks offer, then go to our website, talkontowalkon.com. We would love to talk to you about how we can share our many life lessons so you, your team or your students can walk on in life with confidence. If you're listening to the audio version of our podcast, don't forget you can also watch full episodes and view highlights on our YouTube channel. Obviously, if you'd like to sponsor our podcast, we would also love to hear from you. So let's connect, have a conversation, and you never know where it will lead.